And what I would like to do today is focus on one particular aspect of what we've talked about already. Which is what Kyle very cleverly called the love loop. And I like that term for it. But first, I want you to think about, remember I said, okay, we start in the natural world. We have what everybody knows of as the water cycle, because clouds drop rain to the earth. We kind of glossed over this part down here. We talked about the rain coming down and then the water evaporating again, so that the and rising back up, to keep the language analogous. We talked about that, but we didn't talk a lot about what happens down here. So what I'd like to do is take about 3 minutes, and I'd just like you to think about and shout out, what does the water do on the earth while it's here? There's a lot, but just name some things.
Nourishment.
Nourishment.
It runs off.
Yeah.
Or soaks in.
Okay. It runs, it soaks.
Causes growth.
Growth. For what?
Cools.
Growth for?
Plants
and
animals.
Thank you.
Everything.
Well, now not everything, right? Because some things it wears away.
It does. Wears away.
So some, you know, sometimes dirt and stone gets diminished in certain places by the water as it runs. I'm sorry, somebody said something else after growth and I missed it.
Cools.
Cool, thank you. It cools.
Actually, I said pools.
Oh, pools.
But
well, it does that too. It does that too. Sorry, you know.
So what was the question?
So it does both. It ponds up. It collects in various places. But it does also cool off, especially in, you know, we're appreciative of that in Texas, maybe more so than in some northern climes.
It's not running. It becomes stagnant.
Ah, it can become, it can stagnate.
But when it falls, it refreshes.
Say, it refreshes.
And washes.
Washes. How about
cleans.
If I put all of that under cleans? Because that is one of the things it does.
It wipes out football games. And
it's sometimes inconvenient.
Inconvenient, yeah.
Wipes rain out football can be games. Destructive.
And marching bands.
We'll just lump all that together. There are several things that it can be inconvenient for, right? Any outdoor event that humans have planned, rain, as it comes down, can be inconvenient, and as it soaks in to the ground and becomes a mud patch, and as it pools on the ground, it can be still be inconvenient. So it can be inconvenient to our plans.
It can be destructive as well.
Destructive, okay. Tell me more.
Contaminated.
Floods.
Yeah.
Okay.
You didn't hear
so all of this.
Contaminates.
It okay.
Can become contaminated.
It contaminates by breaking down barriers and we'll say mixing. How about that?
Fracking.
Contaminates by mixing. Okay, I think that's enough. That's not necessarily everything, but that's enough for our purposes this morning. So notice we started out with stuff that's good, the stuff that we kind of like, but over here then we went, stagnate, inconvenient, destructive, flood, it contaminates. So there's two sides to it. But keep in mind that none of this is under our control. To some degree, we can sort of mitigate flooding sometimes, somewhat, but we can't prevent it. Right? We can build dams, we can build levees, but as we've all seen in the last decade with hurricanes and et cetera, heavy rains, torrential rains, the weather folks like to call it, there can still be floods. So none of this is really under our control. So all of this is happening to the world regardless of what we do, to some degree at least. And maybe some folks have, you know, hopes and designs that someday we'll be able to control it. Personally, I hope we don't, but nevertheless. So all of that is stuff that happens while it's on the earth. Okay? So shift your thinking now, because from the earth, it rises back up. And we talked about if God's love comes down to us and it does stuff, then we have an appropriate response. Chief among those that response is thanksgiving, praise, worship, adoration, obedience. We can go through that list again. But right now, what I'd like you to think about and call out is what happens while the love is down here. And if we want to start by saying, okay, how many of these kinds of things can we also say God's love does? Because some of them we definitely can, right? Right off the bat, we can say nourishment. It's a different kind of nourishment. We can say growth. We can say it runs. We can say it soaks. It refreshes, definitely. I'm not so sure about pools and cools. Maybe. We could think about it that way. You can find places. Hopefully the church is a place where God's love can be seen to be pooling up, right? Can the love that he gives us stagnate?
Yes.
Oh, okay. How does that happen?
It's because of how we interact or lack.
Think about it in the natural world. Water stagnates because it has no outlet. Mm-hmm. It cannot keep moving. So God's love can become, in a sense, stagnant because we don't give it its proper outlet.
Mm-hmm.
What about cleansing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Oh, now we get over to this other side. What about this? Is God's love ever inconvenient to our plans?
Absolutely.
We'll give that one a big double check mark.
Well,
definitely.
Floods is probably a positive, even though in water it's on the negative column. But floods would be a good thing.
Well, sometimes. But sometimes it feels like a flood, and it's not a good thing because you don't want to deal with what his love is telling you to deal with.
Is God's love ever destructive? Does it ever tear down?
No.
Strongholds.
Hope.
Depending on what we do with it.
Yeah. His love would tear down the things in our lives that we hang on to.
I'm hearing two different streams of thought here. One is, no, God's love never tears down. Another is, yes, there are things in our life that need to be torn down by God's love.
Which is a constructive thing, not a destructive thing.
Ultimately, yes. But in the midst of it, I think it can feel just as destructive as a flood can. So I'm going to say, yeah, somewhat reluctantly, we have to think about it. Yes, it can be destructive in the same sense that if you're going to remodel a home, what's the first step? Demo day, right? If you watch the TV shows where they're always rehabbing. Demo day, where you have to tear it down first. And get down to the substructure, get down to what you're going to keep. And in the midst of that, it's destructive. It's deconstructing what was once built. So in that sense, I would agree, yes, there is a sense in which God's love is deconstructing. Maybe we could call it that rather than just destructive. Yes, it can flood. It can come along and wash away everything we thought we had a firm hold on. What about contaminates by mixing? Not so sure about that. Oh, that's already the choir's
beat.
What's that noise? That's already the... Choir, we are testing a recording thing this morning, so assuming it works.
You'll send it to us.
We'll find a way to get it to you.
Great.
Thank you.
You lucky people that get to stay.
We don't get to stay much longer because I am subdeacon today, so I need to reset that for myself. Otherwise, I will just run right past it. Anything else that's not up here for the natural water cycle we can think of that God's love does for us or does while it's amongst us, while it's within us?
Encourages us.
Encourages, okay. I'm going to get a different color since we have them. Gives us courage. It's courage in us. What else?
Comforts us. It comforts.
Comforts.
Strengthens.
Water can be a catalyst while it's here.
Okay.
So similarly, God's love can be a catalyst.
Okay. Can you give us an example of what you mean? Not disagreeing.
Which one, water or God's love?
God's love.
Well, when we see people, or when we go out into the world and we are among people who maybe are hurting and maybe have problems, they'll come to us, they will be attracted to us at times and ask us, what is it that I should do? Ask for advice. So as a result, it doesn't really change me so much as it changes the other person. It can change me also, but the definition of a catalyst is that it's not changed by the reaction, right?
Something that initiates a reaction, initiates a transformation of some sort, but
correct,
it's not thereby changing itself,
yeah,
right? I like that. One of the things I was thinking about in thinking about this whole process is there was a sense in which as God's love pools in us, collects in us, then there's a sense in which we become the source. Not the same. I'm not saying we become God. I'm just saying there's a sense in which we can become the source of this cycle in someone else. And I think that's kind of what you're saying too, is that we can, by our presence and bringing the Spirit of God, bringing the love of God into the world with us, we can become the source of someone else's transformation without necessarily even realizing it.
But we have to be open to God's love pooling in.
Absolutely.
Because if we put the barrier up, we don't do any good.
Absolutely. If we do not become that outlet, it stagnates. And you see this in people, you see this in churches also, where everybody was, come together and they really enjoy being together, but nothing much happens after that. So it can happen both at the personal and at the corporate level. Okay, I want to shift the conversation a minute to just some linguistic things, one specific linguistic thing. And that is, what do we mean when we say love? Because maybe not in this room, but I'm sure if we look at the larger body of St. Peter and St. Paul, we would find somebody that might be willing to say, I love going to Ranger games. Maybe somebody might say, I love going to Cowboy games. Maybe not so much this year. But the point is, we can say, I love a lot of different things at a lot of different levels, And they don't all really mean the same thing, even though we use the same word, right? A good example of that in Scripture, it's not so obvious in our translations of it because, again, we use the one word to mean many different things, but when Jesus is talking to Peter after the resurrection, and he says, "Peter, do you love me?" Well, the translations we mostly read say, "Well, of course I love you, Lord. You know I love you." But what's missing kind of there, unless you've already dug into it before, is Jesus says, "Peter, do you agape me? Do you love me with a sacrificial love?" And you know what Peter's response is? "Lord, you know I love you like a brother." He's not saying the same thing Jesus is asking. He's saying, "Lord, you know I phileo you." Jesus asked him again, "Peter, do you love me with a sacrificial love?" And Peter says, "Lord, do you know I love you like a brother?" And then Jesus says, "Peter, do you love me like a brother?" And it's at that point that Peter's heart is changed, because Jesus came to meet him where he was, but made it very clear that what Peter was saying was not what Jesus was asking for. So we can get kind of hung up on that word love, because we mean it with God, we mean it with husband and wife, we mean it with sports teams, we mean it with food. You everybody hear it say, you know, "Oh, that pie is to die for." Personally, I've never used that because I don't get that involved with my food, okay? But I have heard people talk about it that way. You know, and it's like, "Oh, I just love that." So, and I hear this in the office, "Oh, I just love that place. Let's go to that place again for lunch," you know. And it's like, eh. It's not the same thing, right? But we get a little bit tricked into thinking it's somehow the same because we use the same word for it. And there are some similarities. But the thing that Jesus came to give us is this sacrificial love, this agape, not just brotherly love, not just love between husband and wife, not just the erotic love, not just the brotherly love, not the love of this or that, which might more properly just be said, you know, deep like or something. But it's not that he came to give us. He came to give us the sacrificial love, and not just so that we would be recipients, but so that it would run through us and not stagnate within us.